Thank you. Welcome. Today is the fourth today of May. Fifth. Yeah, I missed a day there. 5th of May, 2009. And tomorrow, is it today or tomorrow? Tomorrow, Mercury goes retrograde. Until, what is it, 30th? Mm-hmm. May 6th to May 30th. So when Mercury goes retrograde, you have to be a little more careful about computers, communications, systems, printers, various kinds of machinery and technology, travel, airplanes, planes, buses, coaches, trains, cars, trucks. It usually means things will be exacerbated or more difficult, but for the most part, it's usually minor things, nothing that can't be overcome. And Mercury is the planet of communication, so we have to be more careful in our communications with others because we stand a much greater risk of having a misunderstanding or people not really knowing what you're trying to say, miscommunicating or misunderstanding. Mercury is also the planet of contracts, agreements, anything where a signature is required and it becomes a binding legal document. You got to be real careful what you sign while Mercury is retrograde. Best case scenario, in an ideal world, you'd wait 3 weeks before signing something, especially if it's something that will lock you into, let's say, payments for the next 6 years or 5 years or 25 years. Wouldn't be the best idea. I've seen many, many cases of problems with documents, too numerous to mention. So if that can be avoided, it is best to be avoided. It's not good to buy a car under Mercury retrograde because, you know, it's about travel and movement.
Does Mercury move fast? Is it fast-moving?
Fast-moving planet.
So would it, if it's going retrograde?
Because it's close to the sun. Okay. Mercury, if you look at a chart,
I'm trying to get at does it have another effect if it's retrograde in a certain sign that it's in now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's it in now?
And if it's with a certain planet, it will also have a certain effect, right? Mercury right now is in Taurus. Well, that's a sign of Venus. So
communications and relationships, close, like marriages and boyfriend girlfriends.
Yeah, Mercury in Venus is also a sales yoga, where you sell things. Mercury and Venus together in a chart, any connection between Mercury and Venus means it's these people are very, very good at selling, and you know, trade, commerce, marketing. Anything like that. So a retrograde Mercury in Taurus would mean not such a great time, for example, to begin a marketing campaign.
Or putting deals together.
Or displaying your art at a gallery. Now, if your art's already in the gallery, that's one thing. Because then you would have begun when Mercury was direct. But if you're about to open your, have your big gallery opening in the next 3 weeks, not the best. If you're trying to sell your car in the next 3 weeks, not the best. Or your art, and we said that. But Taurus is also crops, because Taurus is the bull, and Taurus is an earth sign, so it has a lot to do with the fields and the crops. So retrograde Mercury may hamper crops in some way, be it planting or cultivation. I don't know exactly. It could create some problems.
And then the different signs have a natural house, is that what you call it?
Well, Mercury and Venus are friends. So Mercury would be considered good in Taurus, strong.
But do you not see, I think I've heard you say like Taurus is the something's house. No? It's a natural fourth house or a natural...
Taurus is a natural second house.
Okay.
Yeah. So the natural second house is accumulated wealth, finance.
Why does Mercury go retrograde and other planets go retrograde? Are you saying
much? Yeah, they all have an impact. But Mercury has an impact.
We always hear about Mercury.
Yeah, because its impact seems to be more palpable than that of other planets. And you see, when Jupiter goes retrograde, it's 4.5 months. And Saturn, I can't remember the length, but it's, I think, even longer. About, you know. So it's far more subtle in its effect. Mercury is really noticeable. Everybody gets it. When you start talking about Mercury retrograde, the lights go on. People know about it. Lots of people know about it. Nowadays, you know, you can go to a car dealership and tell them, well, I'm not going to buy your car today because Mercury's retrograde. In America, you can. They go, oh, yeah, okay. They know. You know. So it's more and more, it's accepted. You know. So it's just something that seems to have more of an effect. That's measurable. You know, you can argue with planetary effects. Well, I mean, how much does that, can you measure it, or does it have an impact? Well, it's kind of all subjective. I mean, you'll know your own self. Some planetary periods you've gone in have a tremendous effect, you know, positive or negative. Other ones, you know, not so much. So, but Mercury seems to. So we have that for the next 3 weeks. And, yeah, Thursday is the appearance day of Narsingha, or Narasingha, the half-man, half-lion incarnation of Vishnu. So we're going to talk about that a little bit tonight, tell that story. And so Thursday is a good day for increased meditation and any kind of penance, austerity, sacrifice that you might want to do, and offer that up to God. Thursday is an especially beneficial day. According to yoga philosophy, it is recommended that one fast the entire day. That means the entire day means from when you rise until sundown. If you can't fast all day long, then try to think of something that you could cut out. Like one of the things they would recommend is eat no grains. Well, they all sort of already... If you're an avid meat eater, then give up meat for the day. If you're not a meat eater, if you're a vegetarian, give up grains for the day. Just eat fruit and veg. or give up fruit and veg and just do liquids for the day. And if that's too much for you, then you don't have what you can, or just do water. Make some sacrifice. It's a good idea. Don't just make sacrifice. Make an offering of your sacrifice. Making sacrifices is no good unless it's offered. Okay, so I was hoping we'd have more people here today, but we don't have a lot of people, so I'm going to go ahead and do this 16 names of Vishnu. Did you get this, Colette?
Yes.
This is a really, really nice mantra. I know it's real long, and we normally don't give big long ones like this. If we gave even one of those stanzas, that would be a lot. We normally don't, but I'm giving you a big blast here today in honor of Narasingha and his appearance on Thursday. Vishnu is God. You can call him what you like. In the yoga philosophy, he's called Vishnu. And we chant this prayer every day. And you'll see why we do. It's really, really nice. So what I'm going to do, I'm just going to chant it first, and then I'm going to give you the translation, which I've done on the back. And then we can discuss it or learn it. Aushadhe chintayed Vishnum bhojane cha janardanam shayane padmanabham cha vivahe cha prajapatim yudhe chakra darang devam pravase cha trivikramam narayanam tanutyage shridharam priyasangame dusvapne smaragovindam sankate madhusudanam kanane narasinghaṃ cha bhavake jalashayinam jallamadye varaham cha parvate ragunandanam gammane vamanam chaiva sarva karyeshu madhavam. Long one, huh? The last one is not part of it. It's just an extra verse to tell you the benefits. And that says, sho dashaitani namani praktar uttaya yah patet sarva papa vinirmukto vishnu loke mahiyate. So the translation is, when taking medicines or herbs, one should invoke Vishnu, who exists everywhere. So you're calling upon the different names or manifestations of Vishnu when you do different things in daily life, and also when you're in different circumstances of danger. So, taking medicine or herbs, you chant, you invoke Vishnu, you call on Vishnu. You might say, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. Something simple. When eating, one should invoke Janardana, who sets into motion the karmas of all beings. So, these are all names for Vishnu, and that's what Janardana means. So before you sit down, this is like saying grace then. You should invoke Sri Janardana. When lying down, one should invoke Padmanabha, from whose navel sprung a lotus flower, the birthplace of Brahma, the creator. So when Vishnu lay down, he went into the mystic sleep, the yoga nidra, and he dreamt the creation. out from out of his navel, like an umbilicus, came a stem. At the end of the stem is the lotus flower, and Brahma appeared on the lotus, and Brahma was the creator, became the creator of all the variety in the material world. This is different than the Big Bang theory. When marrying, one should invoke Prajapati, the progenitor who populates the worlds. So Prajapati, or progenitor, means the one who has babies, produces children. In battle, one should invoke Chakradhara, whose weapon is the chakra. That means one who holds the chakra. So Vishnu has the chakra, and that's his weapon. So in battle or in struggle, maybe you're in a legal battle. Maybe you're having trouble with somebody at work or the boss. Or maybe, who knows, your neighbor. Could be anybody. When traveling, one should invoke Trivikrama, whose three steps covered the entire universe. He saw some deities of Trivikram. Tri means three, and Vikram means steps, but Vikram also means extraordinary deeds, extraordinary activities. So three extraordinary deeds, but in this case, three steps. So with the first step, he asked King Bali. He came to the to Bali's kingdom, and Bali was the king of the demons. But even though he was king of the demons, he treated the Brahmin, who was a priestly person, with due respect. So Vishnu appeared in the form of a dwarf Brahmin. So not only was he a priest, he was a dwarf. He was especially small. But he was treated with respect. So Bali found him very attractive, because it's Vishnu. He's all attractive. And he said, "I'm the king. Let me give you a boon. What would you like? I'd like to give you something." He said, "No, I don't really want much." "Well, let me give you some gift." He said, "Well, give me three steps of land." Yeah, it's like a joke. They're all like, "He's a little dwarf. He wants three steps of land. Well, let's run from here to there. What's, you know, this is great, great humor in the court." And, No. Yeah, Bali says, "No, you ask for something substantial. I'm happy to give." He says, No, I only want three steps of land." "Okay. You shall have your three steps of land. I grant it to you." So with that, Vishnu began to expand and expand and expand and expand and expand. And Vishnu became huge. And he took his first step and he struck the top of the universe, cutting a hole in the universe, and the Ganges came down through. With his second step, he covered the bottom of the universe. Now the entire universe was covered in two steps. And Bali was, "Uh-oh." And Vishnu said, Vamana. "But you've offered me three steps, and already I've covered everything in two. So where shall I place my third step?" And Bali said, "My lord, please place it on my head." And he surrendered to Vishnu. So Vishnu gently placed the third step on his head, and Bali became a great devotee of Vishnu. And he changed his ways. He changed his allegiance from the demons to the gods. Bhumi? We are doing the translation for the 16 names of Sri Vishnu. And if you go on the back page, we are in the second stanza. At the time of death, one should invoke Narayana, who gives life. to all people. So, Vishnu as Narayana creates life. So at the time of death, when you're ready to die or someone else is dying, then one should call on Narayan. Narayan, Narayan, Sri Narayan. Then, when meeting loved ones, one should invoke Sridhara, the husband of Lakshmi, the goddess of fortune. Sridhara. When experiencing insomnia or bad dreams, one should invoke Govinda, the protector of the cows. So instead of counting sheep, you should be calling on Govinda.
I did that twice this week. No work question.
When in danger, one should invoke Madhusudana. Madhusudana. You know, so there's two U's. Madhusudana. That's like a long U. The destroyer of the demon named Madhu. So Vishnu, in one of his incarnations, killed this big demon named Madhu. So this is to overcome danger, to annihilate the danger, you call on Madhusudana. When in the forest, one should invoke Narasingha. This is pronounced Narasingha, the half-man, half-lion incarnation of Vishnu. And Narasingha, we're going to talk about Narasingha because Thursday is his appearance day. I'll tell you about him. So if you're in the forest, that doesn't mean when you're walking through the forest necessarily. Well, you could, but in your forest and you're in trouble. Maybe you're lost or you're being chased by a bear. Where I come from, that's a definite possibility. Being chased by a bear. Pardon?
Don't call your mother.
I never called her a bear. Okay. So then you call on Narasingha. When facing fire, one should invoke Jalashayi, who lies down upon the cosmic ocean to enter the mystical sleep of universal creation. So here Vishnu lies on the serpent couch, Shesha. And again, it's the same thing we just talked about in the upper line about going into the mystic sleep, the yoga nidra, to create the universe. We did that in terms of the third line, I think it was. Anyway, Jalashayi, Jala means water. And Shai means one who lies down upon the water. And this is when you're facing fire, when there's fire. So you're using a mantra in the form of Vishnu's name to combat fire. So this is Jala, water. You're pouring water on fire. But you're not pouring water on fire. You're pouring the mantra on the fire.
Okay. Fire encompass like anger and stuff as well?
Well, it could, but this literally means fire.
Fire, yeah.
If you're caught in a fire.
That's
yeah. When in the midst of a body of water, one should invoke Varaha, the boar incarnation, who rescued the earth from the bottom of the cosmic ocean. So it says that one time the earth was knocked out of her orbit and she fell down into the ocean at the bottom of the universe. And the reason she was knocked out of her orbit is because of the demons or dark forces upon the earth sapping her life blood, her life force. And it's explained in the Puranas that her life blood is her oil that they keep on, you know. if they took all the lifeblood out of you, like to take the oil out of the earth. See if you could stay in orbit. So this is when you're in the midst of a body of water, the ocean, a river, a lake, and there's danger. Then you call upon Varaha. When traveling in the mountains, one should invoke Raghunandana. Raghunandana is a name for Ram, who is the joy of the Raghu dynasty. Raghunandana means the joy of the Raghu dynasty. So, Eilish can tell us all about Ram and the Leela of Ram. She just finished reading the Ramayana, and so she's well familiar with it now. When setting out, one should invoke Vamana, the dwarf incarnation, dwarf Brahmana incarnation of Vishnu, who covered the universe in three steps. Now he's mentioned again. First he's mentioned as Trivikram, three great deeds, or three steps. Now he's mentioned by his actual name, which is Vamana. Vamana means dwarf. And for all other activities, one should invoke Madhava, or Krishna, whose sweetness is unparalleled in all the worlds. Madhava comes from the word madhu, which means honey, sweetness. Even today, we call our loved ones honey. Don't we?
Madhu.
You can call Madhu, or a woman you may call Madhavi. Or a man you would call Madhava. That is it, right here. Madhava. A woman, Madhavi. A man, Madhava. Yeah. Oh, sweet one. Oh, sweetie. So then at the bottom is the translation for that last stanza. One who chants these 16 names of Vishnu upon rising early in the morning is freed from all negative karmic reaction and is honored in the realm of Vishnu, the spiritual world. So that's what you get. Plus, if you get familiar with it, then, I mean, you can call on these names in these circumstances and report back to us as you test them out. So now we will take some time, because this is a big long mantra of four stanzas. So I'm going to do a line at a time, and you'll repeat after me. Aushadhe chintayed Vishnum. Bhojane cha janardanam. Shayane padmanabham cha. Vivahe cha prajapatim. Yudhe chakra dharam devam. Pravase cha trivikramam. Narayanam tanutyage. Sridharam priya sangame.
Sridharam priya sangame.
Okay, that's half of it. Let's start at the top again. Aushadhe means when taking medicine or herbs. In medicine or herbs, chintayed, one should invoke, or really it means think of. I use the verb invoke. It means think about, meditate on. one should meditate on, literally. Vishnu. So that's your first line. Second line, bhojane, when eating. Bhojan. Cha means and. Janardhanam. One should meditate on Janardhanam when eating or saying your grace. Shayane, when lying down. Padmanabham cha. Padma means
lotus.
Nabha is, where's your nabha? Navel. Nabha. Nabha. If I say it, if I pronounce it nabha, then it almost sounds like navel.
Yeah.
Nabha. Yeah. So the lotus naveled one, when lying down, one meditates on Padmanabha. Vivahe, vivaha means marriage. When marrying or getting married or at a marriage, cha, prajapatim. The lord of the praja. Prajapatim means one who populates the worlds is a prajapati. So marriage is meant for populating the worlds. This is meant for the primary purpose of marriage is to have babies. Primary purpose. Yeah. It doesn't mean that you necessarily have to have babies, but traditionally, that's what marriage is for. Is to continue the line. Continue the family line, continue the race, continue the nationality, continue. Keep it going. Right? Nowadays, we see that a lot of people are in Italy, I think they've stopped having babies. Mm-hmm. Not in vogue anymore at all. No one wants to have babies in Italy. For example. Okay. Yudhe chakra darang devam. Yudhe in battle. In battle, in war, in fighting. You invoke chakra dharam, chakra dhara, the one who, the devam means God, who dhara carries or holds the chakra. So that's what you invoke, chakra dhara. Pravase, when in, what the hell did I translate that one? Danger, is it?
Traveling,
yeah. Pravasi. In traveling, one should invoke Trivikrama. Three steps. Vamana, who did the three steps. Vikrama means steps in this case, but it also means great deeds, great acts. Vikram. So the one who did the three steps in traveling. So Vishnu covered the entire universe actually in two steps. First step covered the entire universe above. Second step, the entire universe below. Third step, on the head of Bali Maharaj. He said, please place it on my head. So that was the third step. So when you travel, you invoke Trivikram. And you'll cover your distance in no time. Even on the M50 highway. Even all the way to Belfast. Narayanam tanu tyage. So I translated this as at the time of death. Literally, tanu is body and tyaga means giving up. When giving up the body, when renouncing the body, means when the soul is leaving the body. Now this could be you leaving your body and remembering Narayan. Or it could be someone else leaving their body. And you happen to be there. So you want to be right there chanting Narayan, 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 Narayan. Invoking Narayan. Sri Dharam Priya Sangame. When meeting relatives and loved ones, Priya Sangam. When you're meeting relatives, loved ones, dear people, then you invoke Sridhara. Vishnu, who is the lover and protector and husband of Sri Lakshmi. Goddess of fortune. Oh, that is all, of course, very favorable and loving. It's meant to be. Okay, let's go over that again. Aushadhe chintayed Vishnum. Bhojane cha janardanam. Shayane padmanabham cha. Vivahe cha prajapatim. Yudhe chakradharam devam. Pravase cha trivikramam. Narayanam tanutyage. Sridharam priya sangame. Okay, so repeat this line after me, please. Dusvapne smara govindam.
Dusvapne smara govindam.
Sankate madhusudanam.
Sankate madhusudanam.
Kanane narasingham cha.
Kanane
Pavake jalashayinam.
Pavake jalashayinam.
So, let's top of that stanza. The swapne. Swapna is sleep. Sleep, dreams. And duh is bad, difficult, problematic. Sleep or dreams. So when having this, that smara means one should remember. Smara literally means remember. Govindam. Sankate means, what did I translate as? Danger, no?
Yes.
One in danger. Sankata.
Crisis.
Then you should remember Madhusudana. Vishnu, the destroyer of the Madhu demon. Kanane, in the forest, or problems when in the forest, then you should remember Narasingha, half man, half lion. We're going to talk about him in a minute. And then Pavake, and Pavaka is fire. Fire. When in fire or in danger, facing fire, in danger of fire, Jalashayinam. Lying down upon the jal, the water. So that's why you remember that, because water puts out the fire. Next line, next stanza. Jalamadye varaham cha. Parvate Raghunandanam.
Parvate Raghunandanam.
Gammane Vamanam Chaiva.
Gammane Vamanam Chaiva.
Sarvakaryeshu Madhavam.
Sarvakaryeshu Madhavam.
So, Jalamadye, in the middle, Madhye means in the middle, or in the midst of the jal, of the water. Ocean, river, lake, loch, and there's trouble, danger, then you call upon Varaha. Varaha is the boar incarnation of Vishnu, went all the way down to the bottom of the Karanadak ocean and rescued the earth and established her put her back into her orbit. Parvate, when in the mountains, then you call on Raghu, bless you, Raghu Nandana. The joy of the Raghu dynasty is Ram. Call on Ram. Gamane, when starting out. Now that could mean starting out on a trip, or it could mean beginning your endeavor, beginning your project, beginning your business, beginning the new thing that you're doing.
New venture.
When you're starting out, you call on Vamana. Vamana and Trivikrama, same person. It's the dwarf Brahman, Vamana, who expanded himself to become three-stepper. Trivikrama. Then, for all other activities, Sarva means all. Karya is works, deeds, actions, activities. For all other activities, you call upon Madhava, who is the sweet one. Madhava, which is Krishna as the sweet incarnation. Bahut mita hai.
Mita.
And then the last line says, Shodasha Itani. Shodasha means 16. Itani means these. Namani means names. Yahpatet means one who recites. Yah, one who, patet, recites or chants. Pratar Utaya, rising early in the morning. Utaya means rising, getting up. Pratar means early in the morning. Upon getting up early in the morning, one who chants these 16 names becomes Vinirmukto, freed from Sarva, all Papa. Negative karmic reaction. And what's the name of the Pope in Italian?
Papa.
Papa. Just thought I'd point that out. But in Sanskrit, papa means negative karmic reaction, sinful reaction. And in our culture, it means father, papa. Vishnu Loke Mahiyate, he becomes honored in the realm, in the world of Vishnu. Loka means world. Okay, let's do it all together one more time through. We'll just do it all together at the same time, yeah? Ready? Aushadhe chintayed vishnum bhojane cha janardanam shayane padmanabham cha Vivahe cha prajapatim yudhe chakradaram devam pravase cha trivikramam narayanam tanutyage shridharam priyasangame Dukhswapne smara govindam sankate madhusudanam kanane narasinghamcha pavake jalashainam jallamadye varahamcha Parvate Raghunandanam Gammane Vamanam Chaiva Sarvakaryeshu Madhavam. There you go. Now, this is very potent. prayer. So even if you chant the whole thing, wonderful. Clindy and I, we chant it daily. Or if you only remember a couple of the names of these 16. Now, don't think you can only chant it if you're in the forest. You know, like I can only chant Narasingha when I'm in the forest. No. You can chant any of them at any time. So let's be clear on that. You know, the other side of it is they're just trying to, the whole idea is trying to get you to remember Vishnu no matter what you do. That's really the bottom line. But rather than saying God, you have all of these wonderful forms and pastimes and lila and incarnations. It's much easier to lock the mind in than remember God. Well, I can't even get an image of God in my head if you tell me God. Well, what's God look like according to Christian tradition, unless you mean the old guy with the beard and the thunderbolt? You know, here we have all of these wonderful images of what God really gets up to. So even if you remember a couple of the names, that would be good. Okay, so Thursday is Narasingha's appearance day. Vishnu as half man and half lion.
This Thursday?
Yep. So, yes, Narasingha avatar, great day for fasting. Technically, you should be fasting all day until sundown. Well, you see, when you live at such a northern latitude, the sun refuses to go down until very late at night. So,
at least we're not in the North Pole.
Or it never goes down, yeah.
Time of the year.
So, in another yuga, this is Kali Yuga that we're in now, as you know. The age of quarrel and hypocrisy, the Iron Age. In another yuga, different time, there was a big demon named Hiranyakashipu. And he had two things on his mind, Hiranya and Kashipu. Gold and a nice bed. So money and sex is really what that amounts to. Hiranya, Kashipu, money and sex. Sounds like a lot of people I know. But he was a bit of a terror because he underwent very severe austerities and penances for about 1,000 years, because back in those days, if it was Treta Yuga, they would I'm not sure which yuga it was, to be honest with you, but he did it for many, many years, and the lifespans were much longer, and plus he was not so much on earth. He would have been in zipping around from different planets. So at that time, Brahma, the creator, came to him and said, okay, hold on, you're creating so much heat from your tapas. You're getting too much, you're scorching the universe. Just stop now. What do you want? What can I give you? What boon are you trying to gain? He says, well, I would like the benediction of immortality. I never want to die. And Brahma says, well, that's all very well and good, but I can't give you that because I don't have it. And I'm the number one being in the universe, created being, my own self. So how can I give you something I don't possess? And Aranyakashipu wanted to overthrow the gods and everybody else in charge in the universe and make himself the supreme person in the universe. That's why he wanted immortality. So Brahma says, no, can't do it for you. So then he asked the following. He says, I ask that I not be killed by any living entity. Okay, give you that. I ask that I not be killed in any place. He said, yeah, I can give you that. Any, you know, particular building. I can give you that. Covered, any place, covered or uncovered. With roof or no roof. I can do that. Not to die in the daytime or at night. Okay, you can have that. Not to be killed by any weapon. Alright, I'll give you that. Not to be killed on land, in the air, in the water, on the water. I can give you that. Not to be killed by any human being, animal, demigod, or any other living, any other entity, living or non-living. Okay, I can give you that. And he further prayed for supremacy over the entire universe and requested the 8 yogic perfections, such as anima, lagima, prapti, the mystic cities. Gave them all. And now he said, I'm the most powerful being in the universe. Next to Brahma, effectively, you could argue he was. So the first thing he did is he went and unseated the gods and became the guy, you know, guy in charge. While he was doing his austerities, his wife, who was not a bad woman, a good woman, even though Hiranyakashipu was essentially an atheist, his wife was pregnant, and she went to, or Narada Muni appeared to her, Narada Muni, great sage, and said, I am going to take you and to an ashram in the forest, and the sages there will look after you during your pregnancy, and they are chanting the Vedas and the Vedic mantras day and night, and they're doing the pujas and the offerings and the rituals and the sacred fire ceremonies, and that's all they do here. That's all the sages do. They're always in prayer. So the child in the womb, her son, Prahlad. Prahlad means happy. He's happy. He heard all of this chanting and all of the goings on in the womb. Can this affect a child? Yes. And anybody who tells you it doesn't understand. It has tremendous effect on the child in the womb. Especially, and you might argue, this child, if the child's not very bright, kind of dense, dull, maybe not so much effect. But if you're dealing with a very conscious soul, a high being, an evolved soul, then guaranteed it will have a tremendous effect, even in the womb. So when this child came out of the womb, he was a full-fledged Vishnu Bhakta, devotee of God. And he wanted to devote his whole life to God. And very innocent, happy, cheerful, joyful type of soul. So Hiranyakashipu established his kingdom. The wife came back with the new child. The boy grew a few years, and he said, okay, now it's time for my son to be sent to school. Excuse me. And there were two demon teachers, Shanda and Amarka, and they were to teach him the science of friends and enemies. The science of friends and enemies. What is that science called?
Politics.
Politics. Politics is the science of friends and enemies. How to overcome enemies and how to get your friends to do what you want them to do. That's politics. Simply put. And he wanted his son to become a great king and masterful politician. Well, Prahlad was about as interested in politics as a lion is interested in bathing. And Prahlad, all he wanted to do was teach his classmates to chant the names of Vishnu, worship Vishnu, make offerings to Vishnu, and read about Vishnu. That's all he was interested in. And because he was such a warm and loving and radiant soul, the other children very easily were influenced by Prahlad. So he was living at the Guru Kula, at the place of the Guru. And then every now and then he'd come home, probably Easter break. And his father said, Prahlad, come. Sit on my lap, my boy. Tell me what you've learned about politics. Well, Vishnu is God, and we should all just surrender to Vishnu. We should chant Vishnu's name night and day. Oh, who's taught you this nonsense? So Aranyakashipu called in Shanda and Amarka, the teachers, and he called them on the carpet and said, what's going on here? This is not what I'm paying you to teach my son. You better be more attentive to your duties. Off they go. So you can imagine what's going to happen. Goes on and on. Nothing changes. As far as he's concerned, he gets more frustrated. Aranyakashipu. And finally, he reaches the point of no return. This child cannot be taught. He can't be swayed. He doesn't listen. He doesn't get it.
He's not a good demon.
He's a very poor demon. As demons go, he's one of the worst. So, there's only one paragraph here that I have marked. There it is. Okay, so enraged with his son, Aranyakashipu threw him from his lap onto the ground. Since Prahlad had become so treacherous and had become a devotee of Vishnu, who had killed his uncle, Hiranyaksha. Vishnu had killed Aranyakashipu's uncle, Hiranyaksha, another big demon. Aranyakashipu asked his assistants to kill his son, put him to death. I had enough of this guy, get rid of him. The assistants of Aranyakashipu struck Prahlad with sharp weapons, threw him under the feet of elephants, subjected him to hellish conditions, threw him from the peak of a mountain, and tried to kill him in thousands of other ways, all unsuccessful. Because Vishnu kept rescuing him. No matter what he did, Vishnu saved him. Aranyakashipu therefore became increasingly afraid of his son, Prahlad, and had him arrested. So, and then he, of course, got free. So, one day, he'd have him boil him in oil. And then, the next day, Prahlad walk into the court. Hi, Father. Are you chanting the name of Vishnu yet? What's he doing here? Okay, now chop him into little pieces. Chop him into pieces. Next day, he'd walk in. Hi, Father. Good to see you. And off, every day, he couldn't take it anymore. So he said, where is this Vishnu of yours? I want to meet him face to face. I'm going to get rid of this Vishnu, and that'll be the end of that, and maybe I can win you over. He said, well, Vishnu is everywhere. Yeah, he's everywhere. Is he in this pillar? He says, yes, of course he's in that pillar. Aranyakashipu pulls out his sword. He attacks the pillar, and out from the pillar as it bursts open comes this half man, half lion incarnation of Vishnu. So it's like a man's body with a lion's paws, big lion head, and sharp teeth, very, very sharp nails, kind of the lion mane thing going on. Half man, half lion. This took place in the part of the palace that had a roof overhead, but no walls, only pillars. And it took place at dusk. It wasn't daytime, nor was it night. Narasimha grabbed Hiranyakashipu and he bent him over his knee, put him across his lap, and then he used his nails and he ripped him apart from his, he bifurcated him, or no, he didn't bifurcate him, but he pulled his intestines up, and he died from that, Hiranyakashipu. So he wasn't killed by any weapon. He wasn't killed by any known entity. It's a half man, half lion. Where do you find one of those? He wasn't killed during the day. He wasn't killed at night. He wasn't killed on land. He wasn't killed on water. He wasn't killed in the air. He was killed on a lap. He wasn't killed indoors. He wasn't killed outdoors. It was an indoor-outdoor place. All of the stipulations that Brahma had benedicted him with had to be met, because Brahma's words could not be proved false. So Vishnu had to, shall we say, bend over backwards to dream up this incarnation, which only shows you how wonderful Vishnu is, that he can take such a form and protect and save his devotee. And that was the end of Hiranyakashipu. So this incarnation of Vishnu as Narasimha is very popular in certain parts of India, and some people are very much dedicated to this. There's a mantra that I've chanted to Narasimha. And in fact, Narasimha is on the altar there. You see the little round one? That's Narasimhadev. That's him taking care of Hiranyakashipu right there.
When did you find this place? Not that much in India.
Yeah. No, it's, no, you don't find it. There's only certain areas where you'll find it. And it's this very potent in terms of protection. Now, you don't send them after people. You don't pray to him to go after people.
You do?
Huh? Yeah, well, it would work very effectively, I'm sure. But, you know, you pray more for protection. And, you know, I've been chanting to Narasimhadev every day for about, I don't know, 30 years. So I like to think that I have bit of a relationship with him at this stage. So that's Narasimhadev, and his appearance day is on Thursday. We have a few of the little plastic ones if you want. We have a few of those available if you're interested. I think we do. Okay, any questions or comments about Narasimha? And you can chant his name not only when you're in the forest.
Of animals, Krishna is the lion.
Yeah, in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, among animals, I am the king, the lion. He's the lion, king of the jungle. And among aquatics, I am the shark. Yeah, sometimes Women say to me, why isn't he the dolphin? I said, I don't know. He's the shark. He didn't say anything about the dolphin. The shark is the one that scares you, not the dolphin. All right, now, I wanted to share this little bit with you. I was reading the Bhagavad Gita this week, and there's just a really interesting couple of verses here. This is from the 18th chapter, the last chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And it is text 20. 20, 21, 22, those three. That knowledge by which, this is what we're talking about, mode of goodness, mode of passion, mode of ignorance. So contentment, desire, delusion. Okay? That knowledge by which one undivided spiritual nature is seen in all existences, undivided among the divided, that knowledge is in the mode of goodness. So when you see God in everything, so you don't see the divisions and the differences, you see that one same similarity in everything. That is knowledge or vision in the mode of goodness. That knowledge by which a different type of living entity is seen to be dwelling in different bodies is knowledge in the mode of passion. So every body you see, they're all different. There's an Irish body, there's an Indian body, there's an African body, there's another Irish body, there's a Canadian body. And they're all different. That's the mode of passion, when you can only see the difference. And that knowledge by which one is attached to one kind of work as the all in all, without knowledge of the truth, and which is very meager, is said to be in the mode of darkness. Now, it seems like he's gone off on a whole different direction here, because he doesn't say, you know, seeing one or seeing many in this verse, but there's a connection. So this is in the mode of ignorance. We're not even on the level of seeing the different. Yeah, you see the differences like the mode of passion, but the consciousness is even lower than that. So here's the purport. The knowledge of the common man is always in the mode of darkness or ignorance, because every living entity in conditional life is born into the mode of ignorance or tamas. One who does not develop knowledge through the authorities or Vedic injunction has knowledge that is limited to the body. In other words, it's all connected to the body. There's no higher understanding. He is not concerned about acting in terms of the directions of the Vedas, for example. For him, God is money. Or money is God. And knowledge means the satisfaction of bodily demands. The only thing I care about or know about is how do I get my needs met. This is very low, low level. Such knowledge has no connection with the absolute truth. It is more or less like the knowledge of the ordinary animals, the knowledge of eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. Such knowledge is described here as the product of the mode of darkness. In other words, knowledge concerning the spirit's soul beyond the body is called knowledge in the mode of goodness, when you're seeing God in everyone and everything. Knowledge producing many theories and doctrines by dint of mundane logic and mental speculation is a product of the mode of passion. Well, this person says this, and this person says that, and this is this theory, and that is that theory. All of that is the mode of passion. It's knowledge, but it's all relative knowledge. And knowledge concerned with only keeping the body comfortable, which isn't really knowledge at all, is said to be in the mode of ignorance. So I think that's a really, really enlightening perspective on those three modes. So I thought I would share that with you. Any questions on that? All animals are in the mode of ignorance. They all are. Why? Because they have no discretionary power. They can make no choices. They can only act in accordance with their natures, with their
instincts.
A dog can only act like a dog. Nothing else. A human being can act like a human being, like an animal, or like a god. You have a choice. An animal can only act like an animal. There's dogs here. I've never seen them behave in any other way other than what they are. Dogs.
So true. But they can bite, but they choose not to bite. So
well, but biting is what dogs do. That doesn't mean all dogs bite. But if dogs are going to attack, they bite. Now, there's a cat out back. The cat doesn't usually bite. The cat goes like this. Uses the paw and the nails. That's how a cat does. I've never seen a dog do that. I saw the cat do it though. And the chicken uses the beak, pecks the other chicken on the head.
You've turned into a farmer.
I'm hopeless. She's turned me into a farmer.
But if you're to see God in everything, then we're making a judgment by saying that they are in the mode of darkness, no?
You're not making a judgment. That's what they are. They are in the mode of darkness. You're not making a judgment. You're using discretion and discrimination.
That's ignorance when you're using that, no?
No. Yeah, you're talking about being prejudicial, making a value judgment against something. That's what you're talking about. We're not making a value judgment against the dog. We're saying this is the category into which the dog fits. For example, animals are ignorant because they can't enlighten themselves. You can read poetry to a horse all day long. That horse is not going to talk poetry to you again. And if you think he's listening in reply, if you think he's listening to you while you're speaking poetry, you're wrong.
Really?
Yeah, because he's not reading. I mean, he might be listening to your voice, but he's not, you know, he's not a big fan of James Joyce or whomever.
Maybe he can pick the vibration that would be coming.
Well, he might be able to feel a certain vibration, but we can't take the horse to school and teach him and go take him up through the grade levels. Not possible. Now, there are animals that have certain levels of intelligence that can be taught and trained to do things. That's true. But they're still in the mode of ignorance. They still act like animals. They're not enlightened beings. You know, like they even say, you see so many people, and especially nowadays, training lions and tigers and stuff. Oh, he went back to being a tiger there for a minute and ripped my whole face off. Yeah, that's a shame. He slipped and forgot that he wasn't supposed to act like a tiger. You know. So animals are in the mode of ignorance because they can only act like animals. Even though there are some intelligent animals, I'll give you that.
I think you can help your pets though, but
yeah, well, I won't disagree with that. Of course you can help them. But, you know, they're not going to get a PhD in anything anytime soon. You can help them by playing them chants and feeding them prasadam, offered food. And that will help them. All right. Okay, so let's do a little meditation. Close your eyes, breathe, relax, and let go. Deeply, deeply relax. And let go. Allow the stress, tension, fear, apprehension to drain from your body. Totally, completely relax. And let go. High above, a beautiful beam of radiant pearl white light comes down, down from the heavens, all the way down, entering through the top of your head, expanding throughout your head, torso, arms, legs, out the bottom of your feet, into the earth below. Breathe, relax, and let go. All right. You're in a difficult situation. This may be something that is taking place now in your life. If such a thing is happening, then use that. If not, then allow your subconscious to present you with an idea of a difficult situation for you. You're not sure what to do. What is the best course of action? Should I do this? Should I do that? Should I do something? Should I do nothing? Should I stay? Should I go? What should I do? Now you call on Vishnu, on God. You pray, you invoke God's grace or blessing. What happens? Does God appear? Or what happens in relation to your problem? Do you find the answer? Are you able to deal with the problem effectively? Does the problem disappear? Does it get better? Does it get worse? What happens when you invoke God's presence and intercession, God's help? Continue with the meditation until you have completed it. If you have completed it, then please return to consciousness, awakening, feeling refreshed, relaxed, and at peace. All right. Thank you. Om Tat Sat. Hare Krishna.